Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, you're listening to Girls vs. Ghosts Radio on blogtalkradio.com.
There's no turning back now.
Welcome, everybody, to the first official episode of Strange Deets. I am your host, Sharla Hardin. And with me is your host, Ashley Godwin. And it's really funny, Ashley, listening to that intro, because that was for my and Beth's podcast that we did prior to joining Viddy. And I haven't heard it in so long that it was funny. When I heard it play, I started to panic, thinking, oh, it's showtime.
Yeah. I loved it, actually. I'm like listening to it, getting excited. It's like perfect. It's Halloween night, you know?
It is Halloween night. So happy Halloween, everybody. I'm actually watching trick-or-treaters outside my window as we speak.
Not creepy at all, Sharla.
No, not at all. It's kind of sad because no one's available to give them candy right now. But in our neighborhood, we have like this thing set up outside my window. Well, it's the end of the cul-de-sac. So every year they have this big thing where there's a fire pit out there and a big table full of candy. So everybody knows to just drive their golf carts down the street, grab some candy and a hot dog, and then be on their way. So they don't really come to our houses anymore. They just go to that table, which is awesome. It's like candy drive-through.
I love that idea. I've noticed a lot of neighborhoods actually have started doing that. For children, you know, just kind of setting up one specific location and then everybody gathering there and kind of walk, like kind of like a trunk or treat idea for neighborhoods.
That's a good idea.
It is. And I just got back from, I'm up in the mountains in North Carolina right now, and I took my 2-year-old down to this tiny little mountain town, and it's adorable because it's really like a blast from the past. It's just all these like small town folks getting together and all their kids walking this gorgeous scenic downtown street, everybody drinking hot chocolate. It was really nice. Yeah. You don't get that
in
Savannah, really.
Well, I don't know about how the weather is there, but it went from like 75 degrees this morning to like it's in the 30s right now. It's insane how drastic the temperature shift was. And I was driving down the road on my way home tonight, and it was cold. There was that crisp fall chill in the air, and all the leaves were blowing, and there was leaves all over the street. And I was like, oh, it's finally fall, but yet it's going to be in the 30s. So it's almost like we skipped fall and went directly to winter. But that's Georgia for you, as you very well know.
Right. Yeah. Our winter is like everybody else's. I feel like their fall, you know, and I'm just like, and then their winter comes and I'm like, oh, what do I do? Like whenever I'm traveling and whatnot.
Yeah.
And they just laugh because I grew up in Florida. So
I was talking to Beth. She had, she was at an investigation in, where was it? In Idaho. And she said she got off the plane in Dayton, Ohio, and she was in full, you know, fleece-lined leggings and jacket and a hat and all this stuff. And she gets out in Dayton, it's like 75 degrees. It's like,
right.
You know, this time of the year is crazy for everybody. But so I'm super psyched about our show.
I am too. I was super nervous. This is my first, as you know, we've talked about. I'm used to like, you know, YouTube or just being a guest. So like, you know, co-hosting an actual podcast, this is my first time, but I'm so excited. There's so much to talk about.
we're breaking the safety seal on that tonight.
Right.
Popping the podcast cherry. So tell everybody a little bit about yourself before we get started.
Okay,
I
so,
like a,
well,
I hate that question.
I know,
don't you?
I know. That's why I'm like, oh gosh, where to start and what to say.
like long walks in the park.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I was born and raised in Central Florida. My mom's family is from East Tennessee, so I've spent a lot of time up here in the mountains, going back and forth. As far as like paranormal stuff goes, I was practically raised in it. My whole family loves like horror films and creepy, scary stuff and all that good
Yay.
Stuff. Yeah, so we've always been a very open family when it comes to discussing anybody's paranormal experiences or like ideas and philosophies about the afterlife and whatnot. So one thing I didn't know up until I want to say maybe 2005 was that you could actually investigate the paranormal.
Yeah.
Like and it was when I found that out, it was just the craziest thing because I'm like, wow, there's actually like a scientific way to try to, if this is what you're doing, prove that there is an existence after this, you know?
Right.
And yeah, like what is that? Are we really like communicating when weird things happen and we think we see a like a shadow figure or something, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I just kind of got really into that. And really what got me here was I sent out an email. I looked on the internet in like 2006, I think. The year always flops from like 2006 to 7. I never know really.
Anything like think, now before 2015 for me is just a blur. So
right.
It's like I get 5 years worth of crisp memories. And it's like a hard drive. My hard drive gets full and it's like first in, first out. Whatever, it's gone.
Yeah.
I can only remember like years now just don't mean anything to me. It seems like the actual number
doesn't.
Of the year because I can't remember.
No, I can't even believe that it's almost 2020. Like I remember that just seemed like we are way in the future and it blows my mind when I think about that.
I thought for sure by now we'd have jetpacks.
Right.
I'm feeling
those,
a little
like
slighted.
Flying cars.
Yeah. I'm feeling a little slighted, a little bit of animosity towards the scientific community and engineering field for not producing jetpacks. Because in my mind, when I was a kid in 2020, I was going to be flying around with my super duper jetpack everywhere I went. And
right. And
I'm
easily accessible too. Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Like I feel like they should at this point in our lives. I mean, so much 2020, they should be like ready and available for like $50 on the Walmart shelves. You know,
totally.
Like, I'm not right, but nope.
Yeah, plug and play. Just charge that puppy, and you can go all day on a jetpack.
Yeah,
now that would make trick or treating
like,
fun.
Look how far we've come in 10 years with cell phone technology. You would think we'd have something like that to make walking easier.
That's right. That's right. That's right. So anyway, back to your story. Sorry for interrupting. So
no, it's
2006-ish.
Yeah, 6-ish. So 5 to 7, one of those years. I just know that I looked online and I found this team called the Florida Ghost Team. And it was head up by Rob Demarest, who you guys know was on Ghost Hunters International with me. But it all kind of started there. This was before GHI. It was just Ghost Hunters. And I knew of the, like, you know, Jason and Grant, Steve, like that team,
mm-hmm.
as far as television paranormal goes. And I was like, oh, this is cool. So you guys kind of do that. And I want to learn. And I sent the email out. We met up in Ybor City, Florida, which is the old part of Tampa. And we investigated
mm-hmm.
the Oliva Cigar Factory in the Italian Club. And
Ooh.
I just fell in love. I fell in love
hooked.
With the field. Yeah. Right. It was like this. Okay. For one, you get access to crazy historical buildings. I mean, I love that. That was a given. And I got to meet really cool, like-minded people who also enjoyed and believed a lot of the same things I did and got into really weird dark stuff like I do. So
mm-hmm. yep.
I really yeah, so outside of my family for the first time I kind of felt at home. So I think within I don't know, maybe 2 years later I got this message on MySpace back in the MySpace days. Kevin, this guy Kevin, who was on the team, on Florida Ghost team, and he was like, hey, Rob Demarest and for their show Ghost Hunters International, they're almost done filming season one. Angela, who is also on our local team, filmed with season one as well. She was leaving the show. They needed another female. He was like, do you want to audition? This is what you got to do. This was back whenever you recorded the mini DV tapes and mailed that in, you know?
Wow.
Yeah. So I did that. And literally within 2 weeks, they wanted a second tape. And 2 weeks after that, I had my passport and an itinerary with plane tickets to Ireland and Czech Republic. And, that kind of got me with the show. And then from there, it just like kind of skyrocketed as far as my research goes, my, you know, opinions and thoughts and theories. It just all really expanded from there based on just, I guess, worldly knowledge and what I've picked up along the way. So that's kind of about me and the field,
cool.
Like how I got into the paranormal. Yeah. Yeah.
So all that happens, and then years later, 2 weeks ago, 2 weekends, whatever it was, again, the memory is fading, but 2-3-ish weeks ago, we meet at Malvern Manor.
Right.
We met at Malvern, but the following day, we went on a little excursion. It started off with, like, the desire to obtain a latte. And
yes,
in search of lattes, after the lattes, we find what?
Okay. We found it was me, you, and Elizabeth Saint. We were walking around and we found this incredible model train station store in Malvern, Iowa, right there downtown across from that cafe. I mean, like, me and Sharla, we were, like, obsessing over how these model trains work. And, girl, you were getting into it. She helped fix this whole, like, track. And it's so tedious, right? We learned a lot about model trains.
It was crazy. I think I was most blown away at the fact that, like, how involved this was. This wasn't, like, a little, like, just, you know, simple train track thing. I mean, this was elaborate, and the detail, it's like a degree of scale. It's like one, you know, 100th or whatever. Like, this is an actual thing.
Yeah.
And people do this.
I mean, people go, where was the national convention? Oklahoma?
Arizona? Oklahoma. It was Oklahoma. That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. We were
and
talking
it was
about
like
going.
A 3 day. Yes. And he's like, you know, and we were there till like 3 a.m. and then we went back to the hotel and got some sleep and then started all over the next morning. And I'm thinking, God, this is like really like a big deal. This model train stuff.
Yeah.
It's not for,
like,
the faint of heart.
I mean, no. And you know what? It's like, yeah, it's a hobby, but I feel like, I mean, they were definitely taking it probably more serious than they do their job. I mean, that's the vibe I got from those two men. And oh my gosh. And then we were also walking through the store and we were finding all of the tiny little oil drums and stickers. I mean, everything. It was incredible. Yeah.
It was incredible. Like they had the whole town set up. And then when he would switch the tracks, you know, they'd go through different tunnels. And I'm like, wow, that's like, you know what it reminded me of? It reminded me of Mr. Rogers' Land of Make-Believe, where the train comes through and the trolley goes. And it's like, he's like the little man sitting there holding the little controls and the trolley's going through the Land of Make-Believe. And it's like a real thing.
Yes, I know.
Maybe we should investigate that area.
I think we should. But you know what? What's so funny is how we took our, you know, quick learned knowledge and we took it back to Malvern Manor, and all these people that were there for this event, we were all standing around in the kitchen area there, and we're sitting there looking at the tilt of that of the bar. In the kitchen there, or the island countertop, and we're like, oh yeah, but we can work with this tilt. And then we decided to make it under the sea. train track
right.
world.
That's right. That would be the best ever.
Didn't we say like an apocalyptic or a polluted like ocean? Like we're trying to make a social and political statement.
Yeah, it was going to be a socio-political. It was it was about the toxicity in the wasteland and how like this whole sub underworld like works to remove our garbage and turn it into something that it can use. And you know, because that whole model train place was like a little miniature town and all the buildings looked so real. And we're thinking, I bet there's never been one that's been like an underwater theme. And from there it was born. And I think somehow, some way we've got to convince somebody that they need to do that.
Yeah. I really feel like there's so much. I mean, I don't know. Well, you and I, we don't live too far apart. We could always come together somehow and create this on our own. We can put that up on YouTube. People would love it.
Yeah. I'm good with coming up with like some of the creative ideas, but when it comes to like making them happen and putting them together, it's like, I have to step back. That's somebody else's job. Cause I'm not good with small details like that. I'm a big picture person.
Yeah, I get that. It's hard to find the time too these days.
It is.
Like with everything else we have going on.
Yeah, and being moms and everything else that goes along with that.
Yes, absolutely.
So when we were talking about this and we were kind of looking at episode one and what we wanted to do, you brought up a crazy interesting topic. And that was John Wayne Gacy related.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
Yes. Well, this month, you know, as a lot of you guys listening probably know too, John Wayne Gacy, it wasn't his actual home, but his home sat on this piece of property where he buried the remains of, I think it was like, 29 to 30 of his victims on this piece of property. Long story short, they're selling the house. So I know people were commenting on the article saying, oh, I thought they tore it down. Yeah, they did demolish his actual home. However, this is the same land, the same property. It's just a new home. I think it was built in 88. But still just the fact that I think 29 victims were buried right there, you know, it's for sale, you know, like I know that sounds so dark and messed up that I even get excited about the opportunity of somebody buying
it,
you know.
I mean, it's a good, it brings up, you know, a very relevant topic, and that's, you know, this is like one of the most notorious, or so he's been named, one of the most notorious serial killers of all time. And, you know, you've got 20, they unearthed 29 bodies from the crawl space of that home. And I don't know about how you are with like where you live, but, you know, that's a lot of, I can't imagine sitting on top, living every day in and day out on a place where 33 people were horribly, brutally tortured and then ultimately killed and then hidden in the floorboard. I don't know if I could do it. I don't know if I could do it, but how many houses are there out there where people have been killed or murdered or, you know, and not only is it, you know, a grave, I mean, you're literally would be living on top of essentially what was at one time a graveyard with 29 bodies. But, you know, how many people are living in houses right now that they don't know things like this could have happened?
Literally more than you can imagine. It's interesting because, I mean, it breaks news all the time. You know, a string of murders has occurred, you know, or we finally captured this serial killer. All these cases led up to his whereabouts or her, you know, well, mostly his, although we have had some notorious female serial killers too.
We have.
But, you know, these things happen so much more than we want to admit to ourselves because of obvious fear, fear that it could happen to us. It could happen to anybody, anywhere, at any time. And so I suppose just the thought of being on this same piece of property where all of those bodies were buried and found, it's just, if you are one to be sensitive to, I want to say like energies and whatnot, I can only imagine the feeling that you would get walking, even though the house that's there now was built in 88, well after he was there. It's just those energies stay, you know, for the most part. It doesn't matter. You can rebuild from the foundation up, but the earth is still there, you know?
Yeah.
If that doesn't sound too philosophical.
No, I mean, it is. I mean, it's definitely, there's an imprint there. There's a scar. There's a, you know, there's, I don't, maybe somebody from like another country will buy it, not knowing.
I guess if you did. Someone who has been buying up everything.
Well, yes, a certain, he who shall not be named.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I don't know if I could do it. I don't know. It just seems, you know, we go to these places all the time and do investigations, you know, in asylums and places where there's a long history of suffering and death and things like that. But I don't know. It just, there's just a different feel about his particular place in general. I don't know if it's, you know, this guy was somebody who was a pillar of the community. He was a business owner. I was watching a documentary kind of in preparation for this about him.
Yeah.
And, you know, he was well respected in his community. But the crazy thing about it was, is many, many years before, he was accused of an attempted or maybe it was like molestation. And I don't know, he had to even move out of town to start his life over in Illinois, I think was it from Indiana where he was before that or wherever he was before. And, you know, it watching the history and everything that he kind of went through that led him up to this point, he had gotten away so many times. And a lot of it had to do with the fact that in those days, there was no, you know, internet crime search. Everything had to be communicated manually to other local jurisdictions, and there was a paper trail, there were files, there were faxes and things like that. But if somebody committed a crime in one state, they could move, you know, one or two states away and nobody would ever know.
Right. And that's the interesting thing about serial killers back then, and it's so different now with the tech trail that we have and all these new ways of searching and finding, I mean, through just DNA and the internet itself, like being able to add, like, I was just talking to a friend the other night, and it's like, it's so crazy how many murder cases are solved now based on like people submitting their own DNA. Like the Golden State Killer, he submitted an ancestry website, and he was like this notorious crazy killer. He hadn't killed anyone in a long time, but still, years later, that's how he goes down. Sorry, you can hear my toddler in the background.
That's all right.
Probably my toddler squealing in the background. But yeah, I was just gonna say too, with the whole, you had mentioned Gacy had been accused of sexually, you know, molesting somebody. I had read that he had gotten in trouble by his father because somebody had told him or had told his dad that Gacy and some other friend was messing and sexually, you know, this young girl, and he was abused physically. Gacy was by his father, which we see this pattern a lot in killers. And also, apparently, Gacy himself was molested by a family friend for years. And so these are just similar patterns that we see whenever we kind of like dig into family history. And usually with males, it you mostly see issues with mother issues, but with history, it's so crazy because like you think about it and it's like, yeah, his mom was kind of, you know, was a stern mother as well, but like there was a lot of issues with his dad.
Yeah. His dad was an alcoholic and very, very abusive.
Right.
Not only that, but he was publicly abusive to him too. And there was a lot of shame in that, you know. It's interesting when you do dig into their profiles, you know, and look at their upbringing. Mm-hmm. There's a lot, you know, it's like for him in particular, it was all the elements were in place almost to create this. When you go back and you read, you can see, oh, okay, that's where that fits in. Okay, that makes sense. You know, but I think some of the things that amaze me the most is that, you know, I guess his homosexuality being suppressed was a big deal because, you know, it used to be that was a major taboo. And so I guess somebody growing up in that time where he could not act out on his I guess, natural tendencies in some way and having to suppress those, you know, can that play a role in it? Can that have something to do ultimately, you know, with someone's demise like that and contribute? I don't know. And especially growing up with a father like that, who was incredibly abusive. I don't know. It's just, you know, you don't want to feel sympathy for people like this who create these amazing crimes. But when you start digging into their background, it's almost like you can't help but feel a little bit of something. I don't know. Does it make sense?
Oh, I know. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you can read up on so many like serial killers, like especially like the notorious ones that you hate them for what they did because it's horrible. Nothing will ever make it okay or right. But then you literally look at, I mean, like take like Kemper, for instance, like his history with his mother being so hard on him, being, and it's so crazy how a lot of these serial killers, whenever they're caught, if they don't kill themselves or get killed in the process, a lot of them just want to be heard, and they'll just talk and talk and tell you everything because they're starving for attention because they've been deprived of that attention growing up, and always nothing's ever good enough, they're never good enough. And but again, with all the abuse and neglect that these people were put through by their parents, or if they were shuffled around in homes in the system, it still will never make what they did.
Yeah.
Right. But at the same time, studying what I'm studying with the whole, criminology and stuff, like I can kind of get an understanding of where they're coming from. But I think any empathetic person, anybody who feels for the, you know, other humans at some point, like you said, you can't help it. But what's crazy about Gacy is he kind of went from being this, you know, even though he had that background, he was this upstanding citizen who I feel like, at least from what I've read, and you know, people correct me if I'm wrong, he seemed to still just be starving for his father's approval. Getting involved with like politics. His dad called him names because of the party that he was involved with.
Yeah.
You know, and then he like, which he I mean, I know it happens today.
He should have taken his father out. That should have been his victim.
Right. Yes. I mean, like just one and done.
I mean, you know, it could have saved a lot of time, a lot of effort, a lot of energy, you know, had he just gone ahead and pushed his dad in front of that bus.
Right. Yes. Yeah. And it's just, how many years was he pressed and pushing and becoming like a member of the JCs, like all this stuff?
He managed Kentucky Fried Chickens, his wife's father.
The KFCs.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, you know, he's a KFC guy.
Right.
He managed restaurants.
I know.
He donated like,
I mean, that's like,
he was very charitable. But yet then there was this other side of him, you know, and sometimes it was very blatant, and I just can't, I'm shocked at sometimes when I read about how much he did get away with before anybody really did anything about it. There was one victim that he like stalked, and had, cause then he later owned a construction company, and which was perfect because he could hire these young men who were, you know, down on their luck looking for a job. He brings them in, and then, you know, he kills them. He rapes and kills them.
Yeah.
And they're members of society that maybe weren't as missed
Sorry.
As other people would be.
Okay. Yeah.
I get it. I feel the same way right now. But
no, yeah, it's normal. It will not be like this on a normal basis, guys. If you're listening and that's annoying to you, I'm sorry. I'm just in a cabin.
It's Halloween.
With, like, open walls. I know. I'm just saying, let that add to, like, the creepy sound effects track
yes.
in the background. This is our Halloween
yes.
howling in the back.
That is our
okay,
Halloween.
Okay, keep going. I'm sorry.
Our Halloween sound bites.
Right.
Now just, you know, like he was very, very cunning in the way that he set up his life so that he could, like, procure these victims and lure them in. And, you know, he even had people from his construction company dig out underneath his crawl space. And some of them, ironically, may have even dug their own graves.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And that's what was, I mean, like, just that itself is one of the creepiest parts to me.
Messed
to
up.
To me. Like, them not knowing. Oh,
it's like,
I don't know.
Anybody that you come in contact with today, you'd never know what, like, this other side of their life they may be doing. And it's, you know, it kind of makes you want to become a recluse and never leave your house, but at the same time.
And never trust anybody.
I know. It's
I mean,
crazy.
Ted, I know we're not talking about Ted, but take Ted Bundy, for instance. The dude was a yeah. law student. Like, he was good looking, good with people, like, out in public all the time.
Charismatic.
Like, yes. And look
yeah.
at him. You know, you never, ever know. Ever.
And
oh, man.
Well, you know, maybe we'll make that an episode in the future. We'll do a TED talk. A Ted Bundy talk.
Dude, yeah, oh my god, a TED talk. Sorry, that was great. That was good.
And then and this, like, most recent guy, Chris Watts, I'm kind of obsessed with this story, and I don't know why. And I think I like true crime stories anyway, but this whole
mm-hmm.
Chris Watts story has really just kind of got me twisted, because, you know,
yeah.
I don't see how he could be such a loving father in one minute and
mm-hmm.
the next minute
mm-hmm.
he killed us. I mean, I can't imagine. I don't know.
He is the worst. I hate him with a passion. Like, I
yes.
have, like, strong feelings about him in the worst way, because I watched a whole little, well, like a mini doc on him that had, and I guess it was based off the woman that wrote a book on his letters, because she got to know him and the book kind of, I don't know if, I guess it recently came out, and just the letters and the way that he heartlessly described the way he tried to kill the girls, went and killed his pregnant wife, and then the girls
yes.
walked in because he didn't quite kill them. And then he said, all I could think about was how angry I was that they weren't dead. And I'm just like, that
yeah.
was your chance. That was a second chance for those babies at life. And me having a toddler, it's so hard to talk about it, but, like, watching that, I was physically just ill.
It
was
hard.
I couldn't.
And I think that's what I struggle
yeah.
with the most. You know, we talk about people like John Wayne Gacy and people like that, is how does the brain shift that dramatically, and
yeah.
how is it possible that people are capable of such things? I don't get it.
I feel like any of us could be. And that sounds so, I guess, dark and to say, but it's, I'm not trying to sound like a pessimist about that kind of stuff in my outlook on people and humanity, but I kind of am, because I feel like any of us have that tendency, and it really is just a good balance of the whole nature versus nurture, how
yeah.
you are, like, you know, your genetics, who you come from, and also how you are raised and
mm-hmm.
what happens to you along the way. I mean, I've known many people, including myself, who went through lots of abuse.
Mm-hmm.
In my, you know, in teenage years and stuff growing up, and I'm very open about that, but I grew up and I didn't grow up to be like a killer or anything crazy,
right.
like a molester. So, I mean, I feel like it, there's just a good,
what was the
a good balance, you know, sometimes.
Yeah. And how can, you know, how does it, how does, and some of these people like Chris Watts, how does he just snap? Like literally one day just snaps and I don't know. Is that a good argument for, you know, the true existence of demons? Is that a good argument for, you know, some sort of outside force? I mean, you know, if you look at the whole history of the world, good versus evil, you know, everything is about that essentially at the root of everything, right? I mean, there were philosophers that talked about that. You know, the battle, the yin, the yang, the balance, the good, the bad, all of that stuff thrown together, you know, what makes certain people more susceptible to allowing that type of energy and that type of thinking into their world? And I don't know, I'm not a psychologist. I it would be really cool to have a psychologist on our show, maybe, to talk about that.
Yeah.
And to kind of walk us through what happens in the mind, you know, why people can do these things and why people can't. I think your argument, you know, towards, you know, abuse and the way they were brought up and all of that has a huge part to play in it. But what is that one pivotal moment, the first time that one of these serial killers strikes? What is that? What pushes them to that pivotal moment? Because, you know, there's self-defense and things like that. And, you know, or accidental homicides and things like that. But for somebody to really plan it out to that level, and what happens at that first moment that makes them want to do it again and again and again? That's the part that really gets me, is that repetitive action that makes them a serial killer.
Yeah. Well, sometimes, you know, a lot of the times there is a plan. And like, so my undergrad degree is in sociology. So I got my bachelor's in sociology, and my focus in that was crime and deviancy. And I'm currently taking grad courses in criminal psychology and studying some interesting stuff right now, which I really need to crack down on that. I've been slacking so hard, but anyway, it's so crazy that you bring that up, though, because I've really been trying to dig deeper into that, because it's weird whenever you think on some of your more notorious killers, like a lot of them didn't have, they didn't necessarily have like a direct motive. I hope I make sense, because when I start to think all over the place when I do this. And a lot of the times, though, there isn't a plan. A lot of the times, whenever they have that initial strike, that first kill, and it really depends. Usually that first one is not thought through very well and can be messy, which can cause a slight panic, which can in turn lead to all this other stuff that I will bore the crap out of people who are listening, so I won't do all that. So I was actually, I'm kind of doing this like writing thing on this, what's called like the pratfall effect on that, and I won't get nerdy on you, but so basically when it comes to like the impulse to commit a crime again based on your performance of your first kill. So like you go in and kill somebody for the first time. Maybe it's like an impulsive decision. You get pissed. This girl doesn't want to do something for you to sexually satisfy you or whatever. So you get pissed and you strangle her. Okay. So you panic. What do I do with the body? Do I throw her in the river? No, she may float. Someone's going to find her. They know I went on a date with her. Oh, do I chop her up and bury her? No, dogs are probably fine. So, like, it's just this whole thing. There's not, like, a full thought-out plan on how to dispose of the body. But then they figure it out. It might be messy, but then they get better the next time. And it's more of a drive to do it better. You know, do it. The more you do it, the better you become.
Going back to John Wayne Gacy, it said that had his first victim, he stabbed him to death, and he said that was incredibly messy. So he learned from them not to stab them, but to strangle them because it was easier to conceal and hide a strangled death versus a stabbing murder.
And that's a perfect right there. That is a perfect example of the pratfall effect. Guys,
and there you
just
have
in case
it.
You're wondering, guys.
Case study number 5.
Jeez.
Yeah. So would you go to that property? Would you, as a paranormal investigator, would you go to that property and investigate?
Yes. I would, without a doubt, I would. I know it's not as exciting to some people who like that visual stimulation because it's not the same house.
Right.
But at the same time, it is the same property. It's the same place, as we talked about earlier, the energy and stuff. So, yeah, would you? Would you want to go investigate at least?
I don't know. I don't. I struggle. Like, I struggle with it ethically, but... But then again, you know, I go to other places where, you know, how many haunted asylums and hospitals and, you know, assisted care facilities and boarding houses and things like that do we go to where these things took place? So, I mean, really, there's not much difference, but I don't know. I feel like there's something that was so intrinsically evil in this man that I don't know. I struggle with that one. You know, usually if it's something like that, I'm like, yeah, I'll go investigate. I'd love to. But I don't know with this one, after learning about everything that went on there, I don't know if I don't know if I'm strong enough for that. I don't know. I don't know. That's my answer.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm neither a yes or a no. I'm a very strong maybe. How about that?
Yeah. I understand that too, because when I think about it ethically, like I think about the families of the victims. I can't imagine being a family member of one of those victims and then thinking about somebody getting excited to go there, you know, to investigate.
Maybe if it had happened 100 years ago, I'd probably be more inclined to do it. But since it was, you know, within the last 100 years or But how long ago was it? It was what, the 70s?
Yeah.
Was it 70s or 60s or 70s, something like that?
It was it was the 70s.
70s.
I'm trying to think when the last murders took place. I remember was it 78?
Yeah, I think so.
I think it was 78. Yeah, it was 78 because 10 years later is when that new house was built on the property.
Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, you know, again, because there are probably some family members that are still around from those victims. And I don't know if I don't know if I could do it. Maybe in 20 years, ask me again when I'm in my 60s.
Cause I mean, it's like, it's still a fresh wound to the close family of these people, and you can't directly relate his actions to, like, you know, his mom his mom, but you know what I mean, like his niece or whatever, who possibly never knew him. I don't know. When I think about him, I think about some other situations, how and why, you know, we think about, like, why would you do something like that to these victims? And I always, like, kind of when I picture stuff like this, like serial killers who have, like, a strand of kills, you know, different people, and whether they're at random or planned out, I think about, like, what Kemper said about, like, it wasn't about killing. It was more about possessing, about, like, evicting. He used this, like, word, evicting them from their human body. Just this sense of control. And so that's what Gacy did. He did exactly that. He, like, I can't say for him exactly. It wasn't about the idea or the act of killing them or the satisfaction from watching them die, but possibly it just seemed, with his background, thinking, you know, psychologically, like thinking on, like, that criminal psychology side of things, like, he wanted that. He wanted to possess them take control, and on my count, you're going to leave your, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And then I'm going to place you under in this cross space, and you will still be mine.
And I'm going to keep things of yours. There was like a class ring that he kept from somebody. You know, there were many different things that he kept from his victims. And it's messed up. No doubt about it. So you want to shift gears a little bit and talk about something a little funnier?
Yes, let's go.
Something funny, period.
Yes, let's do it. I'm excited about these next stories, guys.
Me too. So you brought this one up, and I saw it pop up in my messages, and I clicked into it, and I probably laughed for like 15 minutes watching this. Tell us about it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, hold on. We sent a few things back and forth, though.
Okay. This is the one. So this is the driving rats.
Oh, yes. Okay. That's... I'm sorry, guys. Yes, so these rats, okay, so I think about this, and I think about, wow, this makes perfect sense, because this is exactly what I do. Basically, the headline of this story on the Washington Post, I was going through and just, like, reading random news articles and stuff, and it's the headline was, rats are capable of driving tiny cars, researchers found. It eases their anxiety. And whenever you click on this article, it is the cutest thing I've ever seen. Oh my gosh. It's these teeny tiny little cars, and these little rats are inside these little cars and they're driving them around.
That's crazy. It's crazy.
Oh my God. Yes,
it's crazy.
It is.
They're like,
makes sense,
they're like,
right? Like,
yeah, they're like little plastic food containers that they cut the backs out of, and they have these copper wires. So like one copper wire makes the vehicle, and they almost look like four wheelers, but with a plastic cover on them. They're one copper wire makes it go forward, one copper wire makes it go to the left, and one copper wire makes it go to the right, and they like dangled food. I think it was Fruit Loops, they said. Was it Fruit Loops? I think it was
Fruit
Loops.
Oh, I don't remember.
So, yeah. I mean, I'd drive a car for Fruit Loop. So they had to learn to grasp these copper wires, and whichever copper wire they grasp would control the vehicle. So what's funny is you can kind of see it going forward, and then it goes backwards. Oh, we have a trick-or-treater.
Mm-hmm.
They just rang the doorbell. Sparky's going to go give him the candy. But you watch them go forward, then you watch them back up, then you watch them go to the left. And the craziest part about it is these rats figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
They figure
it out.
They
know what they're doing.
They want that Fruit Loop.
And it's so crazy to see the brain function there and, like, how they learn it so fast. And because, like, I mean, rats are so intelligent. I mean,
they really are.
They're like, I'm sorry if you guys love rats, but I think they're ugly and terrifying, like, to see them in the, like, if I'm walking down a city street, I don't want to see no rat coming out at me. But
nope.
I do urbex, so I'm always in, like, abandoned places, and I come across rats all the time. It is something I don't enjoy. However, in a lab situation, they're adorable.
Yeah.
And it's so crazy how they pick up, how it stimulates that part of the brain and soothes that, like, there's like stress and anxiety, stress and anxiety that the rats are feeling in these contained spaces. But whenever they start driving their little cars around, you know, it makes sense. Like, I mean, I know whenever I get super stressed or I'm like feeling sad or having a down day, I get in the car, put on some good music and just drive around, and it helps. I mean, unless there's some idiot on the road, then, you know.
Yeah, right.
It helps.
Well, driving through Atlanta does not reduce anxiety and stress. I'll just go ahead and put that out there right now.
No. I've had to do that 2 times in the last, like, week and a half. And this last time, I literally wanted to, excuse me if I offend anybody, but I wanted to, as I sent a text to my friend, I was like, I literally want to cleanse the earth of all of idiots right now. Like, I was so stressed and upset because nobody uses their turn signals. Nobody cares. They're just, it's like, F your car and your life. I'm in and out. Forget my car, too. Apparently, they don't care about their own vehicles. It's just insane. Atlanta is the worst. And constant road work, too. Goodness gracious. Yes.
It's terrible. But I just love these little rats and the fact that they learn to drive. And I can just imagine one day, like, rat races, literally the rat race, where these animals are competing against each other in, you know, tricked out food containers on wheels. And...
oh, my God. You could mean rat NASCAR, you know? That would be amazing.
Rat NASCAR. That is fantastic. Oh my gosh, the animal rights.
The little numbers.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, I know.
I mean, I think it's funny though. I think it's funny that it reduces stress and they seem to enjoy it. I mean, why not? I mean, give a rat something fun to do, you know? It's a rat.
Yeah.
But okay, so like what happens next if they start teaching other rats to drive? And the next thing you know, you're walking down the street in New York City and you look down and this little rat's riding a four-wheeler past you. Is that what
we're Oh my God, that would be adorable. Probably.
Although, you know, I did look up, rats and mice are known to spread more than 35 diseases. I think that's why we don't like them.
Yeah, they're pretty nasty little creatures. I mean, obviously the bubonic plague still occurs today. It's just a lot more rare and can be treated with basic antibiotics. However, that's how back in the day before antibiotics existed, the bubonic plague was spread by the fleas on the rats, you know, so that, yeah, they're always causing issues. They about wiped out, you know, what, half the planet.
Half of Europe, yeah.
Why am I laughing about that?
I don't know, because you're still picturing them in their little cars, in their rat mobiles.
Cars driving around, flinging fleas out the window.
Yeah, that's it.
Flea bombs. I'm sorry. Oh, God. I don't even know.
But I just find it fascinating how fast they learn, you know, and the whole, like, they literally just put these copper wires in there, and each copper wire represents a direction of the vehicle. They didn't even need a steering wheel. They just have to grab each of the wires, and the wire is going to tell the vehicle which way to go. And it's funny. You guys have got to watch the video. All you have to do is just search driving rats, and the video will pop up everywhere. And it's really, really funny. So
it is. It's funny.
Speaking of funny animals, I have a soundbite I'm going to play you from our next topic.
Yes.
And this is a bird, an African gray parrot, and the bird's name is Petra. And Petra has learned how to talk to Alexa.
Oh, my goodness.
And Petra tells Alexa to turn the lights on and turn the lights off. In the video, you have to go, just subscribe to Petra the African Gray's YouTube channel, because I don't know. I find these crazy things sometimes. I end up going to look for a recipe for, you know, lasagna, and then the next thing you know, I'm looking at a YouTube video of a bird talking to Alexa. I don't know what the progression is there. My Google algorithms are probably all over the map, but
I'm the worst at it, and I'm the worst. I'll end up before bed I do the same thing, and mine is usually I end up watching this guy's YouTube channel who opens and taste tests like decades old, like canned foods, MREs, the powdered pudding, like the instant or cooked pudding, stovetop stuff. Jello, he'll make, and then all from like the 1950s. And this is the weird stuff I get into on YouTube. I love watching this stuff. It's so gross, but amazing.
I'm going to have to search that one. All right.
Yeah,
so here is the recording of Petra. There we go.
Alexa?
That's Petra's voice, by the way.
Hi.
So he's Petra. Alexa, I'm going to play it again.
Alexa? Hello? Hi.
And here's the next one. And then the lights come on. And you hear him making those little noises in the background? The clicking sounds and the popping sounds?
Yeah.
This is the best. I love this. All lights on. This bird is saying for Alexa to turn the lights on. He makes a burping sound. Like sits there and turns the lights on and off all day. How funny is that?
Yeah, that's and that is so incredible. I feel like we're okay. So we're discussing some interesting topics tonight, but a lot. Well, outside of Gacy, our animal topics, it all like kind of spirals back to animals are freaking smart. Like they're so much smarter than we give them credit for. From rats to birds. To even pigs, obviously pigs we know are incredibly intelligent, but this itself, I love this bird so much.
And special thank you to Petra's owner caretaker for allowing us to use that soundbite. I find it incredibly fascinating that animals can, okay, we're talking AI, right? Alexa is an AI-driven platform. Parrots interacting with AI. I wonder if the person that created Alexa and thought about Alexa ever even imagined that a parrot would be using Alexa to turn lights on and off. I mean, how bizarre is that to think that an animal can interact with technology like that in order to, you know, produce cause and effect, like turning the lights on and turning them off.
Mm-hmm. It's fascinating. It can be, when I think about it, a little creepy too at the same time. You know what I mean?
Totally.
Like, what if the bird, because, you know, sometimes the bird will repeat something they hear a lot. So imagine, like, you have a full-on smart house because you know, a lot of houses have Alexa, like, attached to a lot of stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, the bird could, like, repeat anything. So they hear, like, this horrible argument. And they're just like, yeah. And they could just, like, set, like, the heater up or to some crazy, you know, I don't know. I'm thinking all these horrible things that Petra could have Alexa do to people in a smart home.
You come home, all the lights in the house are on, the blender's running, the DVR is recording some weird show, your oven's turned on, and your ice maker is producing more ice than it can handle. I mean, there are some major setbacks from that. But
I know.
I love this bird, and I love the fact that he can turn the lights on and off. It's amazing. Amazing to me. Amazing.
It's fascinating. It's so cute. It's so cute at the same time. I'm so glad they let us use that clip, though.
Let me ask you this.
Okay.
Would parrots make good investigation partners?
Ooh, fascinating question. You know, that actually is, you think about that, and it's like, I would say it could be fun because it would make for, especially if you're filming it, that would make for quite a spin on a new paranormal show, guys. So start pitching that idea.
Yeah.
But I think about it. It's like, well, all of the noises that they can replicate, like you can hear them make just perfect sounds like tech, not like tech sound or like keys jingling sound. I can imagine how, and so like maybe if the bird doesn't really, is not cooperating, you know, maybe what if you like pick up on some sound and then you think it's like, oh, that's like a residual key opening the door. Like actually I got that on a video at Malvern Manor out of all the places, like, but it's the bird, you know, like, I don't know.
So like EVP contamination.
Yeah. Birds are unpredictable. You never know with those guys. You saw that movie, The Birds or whatever.
I did. Yes.
They're unpredictable.
Very scary stuff. And I remember after watching that movie, I was in the car with my grandfather, and we were driving. We were going to get a. There used to be these things called the gallon jug or the milk jug or the milk gallon or something. They were like the size of like the photo developing places that used to be around years ago. But you could go there and you could get milk and you could get like just very specific items like milk and bread and something else. And Slurpees. Uh-huh. And I love Slurpees. The only time I ever got them was with my grandparents. They said, let's go get a Slurpee. We're going to get a Slurpee. And we had to go under these power lines that were like a huge transformer station. And there were these birds all over these power lines. And I remember like as a child, after having watched that movie, slinking down into the seat because I was terrified that those birds were going to fly down from those power lines and like peck my eyeballs out.
Yeah, I don't blame you. You never know.
That was a terrifying movie to watch as a child. And I think it was one of those things where I was like staying up late and I was watching TV and I wasn't supposed to be. And now I know, you know, I should have listened and I shouldn't have watched it because it scared me to death.
Man, that was me all the time.
Speaking of birds, we came across another bird.
Oh, yeah.
That has my head spinning that any bird could look like this. It's called the harpy eagle.
Yes. And let me first say, I honestly thought that it was fake. I did not think it was a real bird or a real story. I honestly thought it was like totally fake. I don't even know. I have no words for this bird. Oh my goodness. He's so beautiful, but terrifying.
Horribly terrifying. Like, it says he is the largest and most powerful raptor found in the rainforest and among the largest species of eagles in the world. I've never heard of this bird.
Right.
Had you ever heard of it?
I hadn't either. No, not until we came across this. And I know it was like a month ago, there was a post made on Reddit like that had the pictures of this bird, and that's when I thought it was totally fake. Like, oh, they just like scaled up the size of this thing and kind of played with the facial features. But my God, no, the thing is real. And I cannot imagine walking through the woods and turning the corner, looking up on a branch, and that thing's looking down at me. Like, I would just go ahead and kill me then.
Yeah, I would think I was already dead if that happened. I would have thought, okay, this is like the messenger of death and he's here to take my soul or something, because this is the creepiest looking bird I've ever seen. He is majestic and beautiful, but at the same time, it looks like a man in a bird costume from a, like, who's the guy that did the film Eyes Wide Shut? Kubrick. It looks like something from a Kubrick film. It's like just really, really weird. And there are pictures where it looks like a normal bird, but when he pops up that thing on top of his head, and you know, this is a very scientific term, that thing on his head, whatever those feathers are that, you know, pop up when he does or she does what they do. That's the creepiest looking bird I've ever seen in my life. And what a great Halloween costume that would have been.
I mean, everything changes when the feathers puff up like that. And especially like the angles, like the one where he is like turned. So he's got his wing kind of up and his head is turned to the, and he's looking at it looks like somebody, like you said, dressed up in a costume, looking over his shoulder. And I just, like, I look at this bird and these pictures, and I'm thinking, like, that's something straight out of, like, Narnia or something, because I just don't, I just can't imagine. But again, like, you guys just have to look this bird up, the harpy eagle, because some pictures, totally normal, but like we were saying, whenever, I don't, is that like a defense mechanism? I haven't really read too far into the puffing of the feathers thing, or like a mating thing.
I don't know. I'm sure it has something to do with one of those that you mentioned. It would have to be. Because I think the picture that I saw doesn't give the, it says image posted on Facebook by Maestros, M-A-S-T-R-O-S, blah, 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 blah. But he's sitting on something, and he's got his head tilted to the, I don't know, bird's necks are weird. It could be the left or the right. I'm not really sure, but tilted to the side. And he's like got this dark body, and then the head of this thing is really light colored, and he's looking directly into the camera. And it's not like a normal, you know, some birds, you have to look at them from the side to see their eyes. This bird's eyes are like perfectly centered, and it's just not normal. It's just weird. And those gray feathers and plumes sticking up from his head are just, I don't know. He looks like the messenger of death or something.
Right.
Not good.
Yeah. that's just like a proof that this thing is a natural predator, you know, with the forward facing eyes for depth perception and hunting purposes. And that right there makes it even scarier, because most birds are like, their eyes are on the side, which is more like prey. It's a prey thing. So he's terrifying, guys. I'm not even, oh my God.
The harpy eagle. H-A-R-P-Y eagle, the harpy eagle. It's funny, it says pictures of the harpy eagle that were shared on Facebook almost 7 months ago went viral yet again after a Twitter user posted it earlier this week. The internet is scared, confused, as well as baffled with the pictures that several are of the opinion looks more like a man wearing a costume than a harpy eagle. But this is clearly not a man. You can look at the pictures and you can see the other pictures of the other harpy eagles. And I just, you know, I'm kind of like you in that I don't ever want to be walking through the rainforest in Brazil and come upon one, because I probably need to change my clothes afterwards.
Me too. I would... Again, I'll lay down right there. I'll do the work for you. I'll just die right here. Like,
It's just over. It looks, So if you Google bird or man dressed in costume, you can see the exact picture we're talking about. But I mean, you know, but he is beautiful too. That's the whole thing about it. It's that fine line between, you know, terror and happiness, because he is a very majestic and beautiful bird, but very scary. Very scary.
Yeah, looking. And you know, you are so right, because that would be a fantastic idea for a costume, you know, to be like a silicone beak, you know, and like a feather headpiece. Ooh, good idea.
Because he has the face of a man, almost, you know?
He does.
It's like
almost,
I don't know, it's very strange, but there's,
sorry guys, we're harping on the harpy eagle.
We are harping on the harpy eagle. We go from John Wayne Gacy to driving rats to talking parrots to majestic death message birds.
Man eagles. Meagles.
He's pretty cool though. He's very big too. There's a couple of pictures like with people sitting next to them, and they're really big. Oh my gosh, look at those talons. Those talons could, like,
I know.
Wow.
Ooh, I know.
Yeah.
Ugh.
He's a powerful bird. Powerful bird. So anyway, anything else you want to bring up and talk about? Or does this conclude F1?
Oh my goodness. I don't know. Honestly, We have covered so much ground tonight for our first episode. I'm super excited to be doing this. I hope those of you listening are still listening and you had fun listening to us. This is just how it's going to be. We're going to probably be all over the place. but in a good way. Well, I mean, I think these topics are great. Yeah. Informative, right?
Informative. Strange deets. We're going to give you the strange details. We're going to give you the crazy news stories ripped from the headlines that we find.
Yes. Yeah.
Strange and unusual.
And we're always down for suggestions too on our Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all that good stuff. So
and
let us know if you find some strange stuff.
Some strange deets. Also, there's a chat room available, and Darren Buss was in the chat tonight. So thanks, Darren, for joining us. If you go to blogtalkradio.com and just create a username, it's a free, you can set up a free account. You can go into the chat room and you can chat with us while we're talking live about a lot of these topics. Now, of course, this broadcast was October 31st. So if you're listening to the replay, thank you for taking the time to listen to the replay. Drop us a line. Let us know what you think. Hit us up on our social media. And if there's any topic you want us to cover, we're all about it, right?
Yep, that's right. We're always open for suggestions because I know we have been bouncing ideas and stuff off of each other through Messenger for the last week or so, right? And just like, oh, but there's this, and this is exciting. Oh, my God, did you read this?
And maybe we'll talk about a serial killer every week, just every other, I think we're going to do what, every other week?
A serial killer or
yeah.
Anything really, any like recent crime thing that's hit the headlines that you guys want to hear about too. Absolutely.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Well, hope everybody had a fantastic Halloween. And again, if you're listening to the replay, thank you so much. Subscribe to our channel here at Blog Talk. And also, Ashley, where can folks find you and your YouTube info?
You know, I'm on all the platforms pretty much. It's just like for Facebook, it's Ashley Godwin Official. For Instagram, it's the same thing. For Twitter, it's Ashley Godwin RL. But YouTube, you can just type in my name and the channel will pop up. But the channel is called The Godwin Network. If you're interested or into creepy stuff, there's kind of a blend of some live streams through like the Villisca Axe Murder House, Malvern Manor, some investigations in the Midwest and the Southeast mostly. There was a live stream walk of the squirrel cage. It wasn't an investigation, guys, but I would like to get back there sometime. Beautiful, beautiful place. And there's still an active rotary jail that still works in Indiana, which I need to get up to see that place now that I went to the squirrel cage.
Did you figure out where that
was? Indiana? Oh, my goodness. Hold on. I'm going to Google that right now. It's in Crawfordsville, Indiana. It's the only working rotary jail left in the United States, apparently. That is what the ladies told me at the squirrel cage. And just of course, my nerdy side comes out. Just like the mechanisms and how a rotary jail and the cells themselves worked, it was just fascinating to see. And they're trying to get the one there in Iowa, Council Bluffs, Iowa, like the squirrel cage working again. And I think that would be great if they can get, you know, that rotating piece working again. People
amazing.
Would love that. Yeah.
Amazing.
So the YouTube is basically just that kind of stuff. Most of it, especially the early stuff, is Urbex, which is just abandoned places, exploring abandoned places. And I'm going to be doing more of that again here really soon. So, yeah.
Awesome.
That's about
it. Can't wait for that. All right, everybody. Thanks again for watching. Yeah, I'm going back to the video podcast days. Thanks again for listening. And have a fantastic week. Hope you had a great Halloween. And watch out for driving rats. Bye,
ooh,
everybody.
Yes. Bye.